Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're continuing our recollections series that we're doing this offseason, talking about some individual players in the past. They may have forgotten. They may have had slightly lesser roles, whatever it may be. But we're talking through their careers a little bit. Here today to join me is Jim Zipcode, and we're going to talk about the most requested player of all so far. And I've got to be five people have asked me to talk about this guy, and Jim, you were first, so you got him, and that's Jared.
I am still honored. I can't believe I jumped to the front of the line. That's terrific.
Appreciate having you here, Jim. As always, always great to talk football with you. Just tell me, start us off with why you picked Jared Johnson.
Jared Johnson, to me, exemplifies something about the Ravens of his era, which is, for the entirety of the Ravens' existence, they have promoted from within on the defense coordinator side of the ball. And so there is kind of a deep, sunk into the bones kind of feel for the way the Ravens standard is of playing defense. And part of that, you know, we talk about like tough physical hustle, sacks, like whatever. Part of it is smarts and intelligence and reading your keys and knowing where the right place to be is on the field. And I don't think I have ever seen a smarter defense than the mid-00s defense with Jared Johnson, with Ray Lewis, with Ed Reed, with Haloti Ngata, just with so many players of great intelligence. And to me, Johnson kind of epitomizes that. He was never a Pro Bowler, never, you know, an All-Pro, not quite at that level of player, but just a key infrastructure guy who always was in the right place, knew how to make the right play, was trusted by everybody. And, just an important part of being a Raven to me.
Yeah, very, very good point there. Lots of good information there about, you know, how the Ravens have maintained their defensive DNA over the years and what goes with that. And I don't mean that as a slap in the face to people who want offensive position players. But typically when you get a veteran receiver or a veteran running back and you get him for a year, you got him for a year. He is not part of your DNA. You know, Jared Johnson, who missed only one game as a Raven in nine seasons, he's part of your DNA in terms of the way you play football, in terms of the way your position rooms are led, in terms of the imprint he leaves behind. He's a big freaking deal. And I think your point is very well taken on that. Jared Johnson himself, tremendous changes over his years as a player, drafted as really a five tech out of Alabama in 2003 at number 109, fourth round. And he was a big guy. I mean, he was a guy who, you know, weighed in the high 200 pounds, a different body type from the way we remember Jared Johnson, is really like a 265-pound outside linebacker or even a 260-pound inside linebacker at times. But he evolved into playing these other positions at a very high level, primarily with the Ravens at outside linebacker.
Yes, and that's an interesting switch, right? So he comes in the league. If you look at his Pro Football Reference page, he's listed as defensive end his early seasons. Mm-hmm. But that's not your Dwight Freeney 4-3 defense defensive end. That's a 3-4 defense defensive end who's playing inside the tackle. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's a big dude. He's standing up to all the run blockers and clogging stuff, not racking up big stats.
Yep. Definitely. Very much a guy who would have made plays for other players. He made plenty of plays himself. There's no shortage of that. Very productive tackler. The Ravens had a couple of those. Kelly Gregg is the prototype interior defensive lineman who made way more tackles than you'd ever expect for a defensive tackle to make. Johnson is that guy at outside linebacker. You know, one of the things about his career that I think is so ingrained in the way the Ravens do things, much to your initial point, is that it was a lot of his play at outside linebacker opposite Suggs that really is a big part of why the Ravens never allowed 4.0 yards per carry. And they did that despite, you know, being a base 34 team who you know, is predominantly in the nickel for these years anyway. Yeah. And no team, you know, generally speaking, teams of the early 2000s in particular, offensive coordinators liked to run the ball against the nickel. You go with lighter boxes. You don't have to have a fullback on the field yourself. It's easy to spread things out, make space, make plays. But if you have good play at three position groups, two of each, two interior defensive linemen, two outside linebackers, and two inside linebackers, you can thwart that. Those are your six set piece guys. And Johnson was one of those, fantastic edge setter, playing opposite the greatest edge setter of his generation.
Right.
You know, and those two were really special. Of course, not Ray Lewis had something to do with it too, but just an incredible run for the Ravens to have all those it's either 20 or 21 consecutive years without allowing 4 yards per carry.
So I want to give a sneak preview, right? The thing that probably the highlight that I think is fondest for Ravens fans is the hit on Hines Ward in 2011. So maybe we could build up to that and talk about some other stuff, but let fans know that we haven't forgotten that and we will get to that.
I mean, I think a lot of people forget. Jared Johnson was a lot closer to Tyus Bowser than he is to Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
Never a pure pass rusher, never that guy, or you know, never a Suggs on the other side. Suggs dropped a cover a lot in his career too.
A lot.
And they really did, you know, use that to generate pressure. But Johnson had almost 1,500 coverage snaps in his career, which is very unusual
for a 3-4 defensive end, a 5 technique.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't stay really at that position for all that long. Right. But even when he's an outside linebacker, he's a Sam. And he was a guy who was dropping more than anybody else from the line of scrimmage, and he made some good plays there. And among those, you know, being ready to line up Hines Ward on that memorable day was one of the big ones.
So that game was the first game of 2011. It was in Baltimore. And prior to that game, Jared Johnson had played in 127 games as a Raven. He had entered the league when Mike Nolan was the Ravens defense coordinator. Jared Johnson was their fourth round pick in the same draft that gave us Terrell Suggs, Kyle Bowler, Ovi Mukayli, Aubrey O'Franklin, Tony Pashos, a lot of good players, and Kyle Bowler in that draft. So he played for Mike Nolan. Rex Ryan would have been his defensive line coach those first 2 years.
Yep.
Then Rexy moves to defensive coordinator, and Mike Pettin moves to outside linebackers coach. And we also have a gentleman named Clarence Brooks who joins the team as defensive line coach, taking Rex Ryan's old position.
What do you remember about Clarence? Because he's one of my favorite coaches the Ravens have ever had. Obviously left this world a little bit too young, but had an incredible impact on the Ravens.
It is interesting to me. So I have few direct memories of Clarence Brooks, maybe a couple of camp highlights or whatever. But it's striking how much he lives on in the voice of coaches who repeat his mantra all the time. And that mantra, you heard it, Wink Martindale. If he said it once, he said it a zillion times. He said, "This game always has been and always will be about the players." And they always credit that to Clarence Brooks. So that's kind of my you can tell that he had a great impact on the coaches that he worked with. I mean, people cite him almost reverentially, but I don't have direct memories of him.
Yeah, I think he's one of the people who really impressed on the Ravens the need for rotational defensive line play. And that has become a real standard for the Ravens, even when they've had great defensive linemen like Calais Campbell. I've mentioned this before, but Calais Campbell played 5 years, the 5 years before he came to the Ravens, He played between 77 and 80% of the snaps every single year. Incredible consistency. You know, he's coming to the Ravens at age 34. And you got to figure at some point those snaps are going to drop. And the Ravens are the perfect team to do more with less. And sure enough, Campbell had a great year. In fact, his, all his time with the Ravens was pretty damn great. But he played fewer, you know, fewer snaps than he had. And I thought that was a very positive thing. I think Elvis Dumervil, when he first came to the Ravens, I believe Clarence Moore was still with us.
Clarence Brooks.
Clarence Brooks. I call him
Clarence Moore may also have been with us at the wide receiver position, but he wasn't, wasn't quite as impactful.
Thanks for saving me on that, but that's a really bad mistake. but in either case, they were very careful about not overplaying defensive linemen, and I think he probably had something to do with that. It was probably part of his design. It was with several different defensive coordinators, obviously, that he worked. Yep. And you know they were doing that. It might have been a Billick thing, maybe, or it might have been.
Well, you know who I associate rotating defensive linemen with is Jimmy Johnson, Miami University, and then with the Dallas Cowboys. So he had. I read a coaching interview with him, and he had. I'm going to say three. That might not be the exact number, but three bullet points for like the things a football team has to do to be successful, and they were. Get pressure with your defensive line. So rotate those guys. So you always have a fresh set of legs. Win the sudden change, which is like the turnover play or whatever. Win those plays. And I forget what the third thing was, but it was part of, it was absolutely part of his mantra. Like it was a thing. And so I think of him as the guy who brought it to the NFL. You know, I'm sure people have been doing it, but when you win three Super Bowls, you know, the league is going to pay attention to your methods.
So Brooks was the defensive line coach for the Ravens from 2005 through 2015. That is a hell of a long run, by the way.
Oh yeah,
I have 11 seasons like that, and it's probably a hell of a coach that thinks, you know, I don't need to be a defensive coordinator. I'm perfectly happy doing what I'm doing, and I'm not sure that may not have been true the entire time. I don't want to project on him goals, but you know, there's a lot of people in the professional world, I'll say, and Jim, I know, you know, you work in IT, I know, and it's something that we see occasionally, is that almost everybody projects themselves into a higher job than what they're in. And that's where part of the problem with the Peter principle is people are always promoted one level higher than they can actually perform.
Well, yeah. So they earn a promotion. They perform well enough to earn a promotion up until they get to where they can't anymore. Down.
Yeah.
I don't know. When you talk about line coaches, I think that there are some famous coaches who are career and maybe more famous on the O-line. But there are a lot of guys in this sport who fall into their niche as a line coach. And that's where they live. And they're coaching a lot of guys. You know, it's not like their position group is small or even single-minded. You know, the corners do kind of one thing, but you've got guards, you've got centers, you've got offensive tackles, you've got, on the other side, you got nose tackles, you got, you know, five techniques, you got different things. So I wonder if it's a group that is large enough to satisfy ambition, narrow enough that you can be a specialist and be the guru, and it's kind of a sweet spot maybe for coaching.
I mean, you know, that might be true. I think what you're describing is very much what I'd see with Joe D'Alessandris, that he's been a very long-term coach, obviously, for the Ravens, and there are other offensive line coaches. And then I say it's also specific to the individual, because you look at Anthony Weaver, and the guy's for sure going to be a head coach, and, you know, he's a defensive coordinator now, and, you know, his career is moving very quickly. But I think it's dependent on the individual. But I think in the corporate world, we're more ingrained to want the next thing because it's so tied up, you know, compensation wise, usually in terms of, you know, what we can have. And there's a big difference between A and B, that you always kind of want the next thing. And you don't think to say, if I'm promoted again, it will be one level too high and I won't enjoy managing people, for example, or doing a bunch of reviews or having to keep 20 projects in or not being the technical guy anymore. You know, a lot of people can't really make that move in IT, for example, and, you know, it's tough with
and you miss it, right? Like if you're like writing reviews and you're, you know, ticking off boxes on project plans and you're filtering down to your team, the edicts from upper management, you're not, you know, troubleshooting what's wrong with the server. You're not getting your hands dirty doing the stuff that got you there. And some people want to get under the hood and stay busy with that stuff. And some people want to push the paper and, you know, God love them. So
very good. All right, my friend. Let's get back to talking about Jared Johnson here.
Are you sure you don't want to do more corporate?
Yes, there you go. People just love this sort of wisdom from us. Yes.
Can I rattle off more of the defensive coaches that all right, so Johnson, you know, he started with Mike Nolan. He had Rex as his D-line coach. Rex goes to defense coordinator. Clarence Brooks, Brooks joins the party. In 2006, Jared Johnson moves to outside linebacker. We've got Rex Ryan as offense coordinator, Mike Pettine as OLB coach, and Vic Fangio has joined the party as linebackers coach. So that team of Fangio and Pettine coaching the linebacker group, that stays intact for four seasons. We move on from Rex to Greg Madison. Then we get Chuck Pagano in 2011. That's Jared Johnson's last year with the Ravens. His linebacker coach is Dean Pease. We also have Ted Monachino as one of the outside linebacker coaches. So this is, you know, a guy who has been with the team. How many years is this? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. 8 years before that game, he's absorbed, you know, he's played next to Ray friggin' Lewis. You know, I'm sure that's a football education in of itself. He's been coached by all these famous name coaches who, you know, bring a lot of knowledge. And now we come to game one of the 2011 season, Pittsburgh at Baltimore. I can't hear you. Are you on mute by any chance, Ken?
Great game, and thank you. I always tell people, go back and look at that one if you want to watch the Ravens' pantheon of defensive stars play their greatest combined game ever with Lewis, Reed, Suggs, and Nada, each being involved in 2+ turnovers in that game, which you'll never see. The Ravens won the turnover battle 7-0 that day. You know, sent the Steelers fans packing with their overpriced opening day tickets that Ravens fans sold them. So, but it was one hell of a day of football, that's for sure.
I meant to look this up on the play-by-play, and I did not. Was this the game where coming out of halftime, Haloti Ngata killed the Steelers running back?
Yep.
So the, I was
his
upstairs.
Eyes were wide open, Mendenhall.
Mendenhall, that's right. So I was upstairs putting our son, who was not yet 2 years old, to bed. So I was thumping him on the back and, you know, doing all. He was well less than 2 years old. He was still napping, right? So I'm, you know, putting him to bed and doing, you know, we sing like two songs or whatever. And I wait for him. I walk down the stairs. My wife has paused the game on TiVo. And she says to me, Jim, you might want to rewind to be the beginning of this half. And I'm like, ooh, okay. And so I rewound to watch that play. So I didn't see it live, but I remember it vividly.
That was a great one, to be sure. And it's good that Jared Johnson could be part of that. Obviously wasn't part of a Super Bowl team at any point. He left and he went with Pagano, as many of the Ravens players do. The other coaches trust them. They knew who they are. They want.
Well,
part
he didn't
culture.
Go with our Pagano. So Chuck Pagano went to Indy, and he went to the Chargers, where their defense coordinator was John Pagano, Chuck's brother.
You're correct. Sorry about that one. He missed the 2012 Super Bowl. Obviously, he was a couple of years late for the Super Bowl in 2000. Just a kind of unfortunate. He's probably also one of the players, along with Kelly Gregg, who's just outside the Ravens Ring of Honor and may never get there. In Johnson's case, I think he's probably even less likely than Gregg that he makes it. I think there's a chance for both of them, but what will have to happen is that the Ravens will have to go through a down period, maybe a 5 years or something, where they, you know, nobody wants that, where they, you know, are exchanging quarterbacks or whatever, and they don't, the defense isn't together, it has to be restructured several times. Draft picks
and
don't
so they're,
work out.
They're digging deeper for guys to honor, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So they don't have any new great players that are retiring off the regular treadmill, but the Ravens have too many of those right now. I mean, Dwayne Starks is another guy that had a fantastic 4 years with the Ravens. It's just not thought of in the same way. And in fact, there's a lot. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
A lot of people will tell you that he wasn't a good first round pick. I say, hell no. You know, you get the value out of the guy in the first 4 years. Typically you got a chance to get a long-term player that you're going to sign and maybe have some additional frictional value as high drafting as high as number 10 overall. But for my money, Dwayne Starks really paid off the Ravens for that draft pick pretty big time.
We Ravens fans often fail to grasp the extent to which our yardstick, our measuring stick, is completely busted for defensive players. Yep. I remember, so we compare them to Ray Lewis. We compare them to Ed Reed. Maybe we compare them to Terrell Suggs. Brian Urlacher, the Bears linebacker who was inducted into the Hall of Fame, for years, I remember seeing, I don't think that guy's that impressive. I'd say he's maybe three quarters the player Ray Lewis is. And, you know, so that's an insane, like, this is a Hall of Famer that I am unimpressed by. The thing is, it's probably accurate to say he's about three quarters the player that Ray Lewis was. It just so happens that three quarters the player Ray Lewis was is a decent standard for a Hall of Fame inside linebacker. It's ridiculous. It's like if you're judging every quarterback by, you know, well, this draft pick wasn't as good as Tom Brady, so he sucks. You know, it's not, you know, so our measuring stick for free safeties, for inside linebackers, for outside linebackers, completely busted. We do not have reasonable, you know, expectations for those positions.
Right. And once you already know what a 10 is, you don't even know what to call a 10 anymore because the scale has to go up to 11 or 12, like the Spinal Tap speakers.
Yes.
But it just doesn't work anymore. So you end up, a lot of people are sixes that you know are much better players than that, and that's certainly a case with the Ravens. So let's talk about some individual highlights. You remember any others from Johnson's career?
Actually, I'd like to talk about the hit a little bit more if we can. So obviously, Hines Ward was well known for his crackback blocks and, you know, knocking out offensive players who were doing blocks on like sweeps and whatnot. And so, one of the things that's maybe not well remembered for Ravens fans, the highlight of that play is Jarrett Johnson smacking down Hines Ward. That play was an interception. Like Ed Reed intercepted a pass in the end zone intended for Heath Miller and returned it. So this is an Ed Reed highlight, you know, an Ed Reed interception. And we remember the linebacker laying out Hines Ward. So that's really interesting to me. So I wanted to lead into this game talking about Jarrett Johnson's football education, because when I watched that play, so that play is Ben Roethlisberger fading back from a pass rush like he has done a zillion times. And you know that the nearest pass rushers think they're going to get him. And you also know that they're completely wrong. And, you know, he's going to complete the pass. And so you watch this play and Jarrett Johnson and Haloti Ngata are rushing Ben. And you see Johnson skid to a stop and turn around. You know, so he's looking away from Roethlisberger, and this is the triumph to me of intellect over instinct. Like, I imagine if you're a pass rusher with that quarterback just out of reach, like the instinct to like zoom at that guy, got to be almost overpowering. And Johnson, in my imagination, he's going, wait, I've seen this before. And he turns around and he looks for the crosser and murders him. And that's just, you know, that's intellect, that's preparation, that's, you know, I mean, that's unbelievable. That's self-possession on the field. And that's, you know, that's the kind of intellect that I associate with those, the Ravens of that era. He exemplifies something to me.
Well, the guy who made a lot of those plays on the other side was Terrell Suggs.
Of course.
You screen the ball on his side, so at your own peril.
Yep.
He had two peekaboo interceptions against Roethlisberger in his career, which was just fantastic. He had one in practice that I still remember is the most remarkable thing I've ever seen, where he literally just kind of hid behind an offensive tackle. There'd be a lot of brother-in-law player happening anyway. And Flacco threw a little pass out to that side of the field. I think it was to Pitta at that time. Suggs leapt up, got the interception, ran into the end zone. Like, there's an end zone for these plays, sure, these scrimmage plays. He's running through the defensive players who are trailing the play and spiked the ball. The whole team goes crazy about it. And Pitta was at the microphone that day, and he goes, you know, he's just a great football player. There's no way he could have known that's coming. It's the first time we ran that all, you know, summer. It's just, I you know, just sorcery, you know, for him to understand what was going on there. But the Ravens have always had really good instincts. When something looks wrong, they head in the other direction on those screenplays.
Can I tell you a Suggs story? Sean McVay, actually, that Sean McVay tells. He was on a podcast, and he was a Redskins assistant in those years for, was it Jay Taylor? I forget who the head coach was. He was the brother of the Bengals, like, offense coordinator at that time. So he was the Redskins head coach, and they're heading into a preseason game against the Ravens. And Sean McVay has a screen pass he wants to throw. And their head coach, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name, says, all right, McVay, you can throw that fucking screen pass, but you make damn sure that Terrell Suggs is not on the field when you throw it. And McVay is like, okay. And so the correct down and distance comes up where they want to throw the screen pass. And by the rotation that's been going on all game, Suggs will usually come off the field for that particular down and distance. And so McVay is like, sweet, I'm going to call it. And they call it, you know, they send it down to the quarterback, and the quarterback, you know, goes up under center, and McVay in the booth is like, holy shit, Suggs is on the field. And lo and behold, he intercepts the screen pass. He returns at however many yards he returns it. And McVay is laughing as he's saying that the head coach is reaming him a new one. God damn it, McVay! I told you not to throw that if Suggs was on the field. Just hilarious story.
I'd love to see the I might have to go back for the video of that game and see, you know, was Suggs on his way off the field, then went back on maybe after the call was made.
He could smell a screen pass. Yeah. I swear to God.
It's a very special player, that's for sure. All right, any other plays you want to talk about? I've got a couple.
No, please go.
All right, so the first one I have, the Ravens win over the Chargers is kind of a, in 2006, on the Heap extension touchdown, beat Sean Merriman, I think it was, Sean Merriman? I think that's the guy, who failed to make the tackle.
Lights out Merriman, the ex-Maryland Terp.
There you go. And he dived in the end zone. A lot of people think there were like 10 seconds left in the game at that point. There weren't. There were actually like 40 seconds left in the game. And the Chargers still had time with the ball to drive for a field goal. And 40 seconds wasn't the longest amount of time. And the Ravens were great on defense. But there was still fear that the Ravens, with a three-point lead, were not going to be able to hold it against
Philip Rivers, right?
And and the Chargers. So anyway, they got a first down and had the ball near midfield with 50 seconds left. And they set up in what is a fairly typical defense for them, eight men off the ball, a three-man pass rush with 3 seconds left, just, you know, going for the interception in the end zone or knock the ball down kind of thing. And that's worked almost every time in Ravens history. They did give up a touchdown to the Bengals 1 year that got a game tied. But in this case, they were ready for whatever deep pass Rivers is going to throw. And Johnson beat his man one-on-one for a very fast sack. Before, and you know, those plays take time to develop because it was about midfield. He has to retreat, then he has to generally run back forward towards the line of scrimmage to get a good.
The receivers have got to run like 40 yards downfield or whatever. That takes,
four or five seconds
or so. Yeah.
And I mean, it would take 5 seconds for them to get there, but the ball could be released a little before that. Anyway, it takes time for that play to develop. And usually the quarterback has to run back the line of scrimmage. Anyway, he didn't even get to that point, and Johnson just beat his guy around the edge and made a quick sack to end the game. The only other time I've ever seen Rivers that upset, and Rivers is a crybaby of the highest sure. order of magnitude, was when who's the running back, Sproles, got stopped on the for the loss of two or three or whatever it was by Ray Lewis to end the ball game. it was a very nice moment, a real good moment for Johnson to get that game ending sack. But one other I want to bring up, and that is from the 2008 AFC divisional game against the Titans. The Titans, a lot of people don't remember this. The game went into the half at 7-7, but it did not look like it was going to be there. The Titans were driving down the field, and they were at the 17-yard line, I believe. They're inside the 20 anyway, and looking like they'd at least get three. And the Ravens were hoping to hold it to that and make it a 10-7 halftime game. Pass or run. I think a pass to Lendale White off to the left side. Johnson hammers him, wraps around with the arm, and it's almost like he's the second man of the ball and the first man of the ball. Ball comes loose right in the hands of Jim Leonard, who had an unbelievable postseason, by the way.
Right.
And that was the half. The Ravens knelt once, and they got it to halftime at 7-7. Of course, the rest is history. Ravens went on to win the game 13-10 on the Flacco drive that ended up winning the game, and the fumble by Algie Crumpler, and all the other things that happened in that second half. But one of the great Ravens games, and one of the lesser known heroes of it, was Jarrett Johnson with that big forced fumble before halftime.
That's great. Do we have time for me to make one more point about him and Ravens tradition? So I have an internet friend who's a fan of the Indianapolis Football Club, who asks me periodically. I met him in the comments section of the dearly defunct Football Outsiders. He is astounded at the Ravens' record of always having a great defense for almost 25 years now. Yep. And he asks me sometimes, how is this possible? And one of the things I mentioned to him is the constant promotion from within of defensive coordinators. And we talk about that in terms of, you don't have to throw out the whole system. The squad doesn't have to relearn the system, whenever that happens. But one of the things that I think is kind of hidden by that is, and I don't know if this is true for every team, but the Ravens have project players from time to time. Paul Kruger, right? They've got guys who are rotational players who are expected in a couple of years to advance into a starting role, but they're not there yet. When you swap defensive coordinators, when you bring in a guy from outside, the new guy does not have any loyalty or attachment to that development program. He doesn't know Paul Kruger from a hill of beans, and he is not bought into, this player is part of our future. We have a plan for him, next year or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you lose continuity with all your projects. And this brings me to Jarrett Johnson, who, was a defensive end. He didn't get a lot of starts his first couple of years. He later moves to outside linebacker, maybe drafted as a tweener in another organization, or in an organization that was less committed to maintaining their tradition on defense and promoting from within. We might not get a Jarrett Johnson. We might certainly not like a Paul Kruger, like these players. Who do we have now? Maybe Jalen Armour Davis might be a consideration for that, or Tavis Robinson, or I don't know, whoever we might think might be a project from a couple of drafts ago who is expected to emerge.
David Ajabo, maybe?
Yes, Ajabo, absolutely. Zach Orr has a continuity with those projects. Somebody that you hire from outside does not. And, I think that the maintaining that is one of the reasons those projects on defense, at least, can flourish.
I think that permeates the Ravens organization so effectively, and on both in the front office silo and in the player development, in the player development, and the coaching. I mean, if you're going to blame Harbaugh for everything that goes wrong, you better credit Harbaugh for creating this incredible continuity of great coaches. And by the way, look at every great coach that's ever been around, Andy Reid or Belichick or others. They all lose their coaching staffs regularly to other teams. That's one of the hallmarks. It's because they're great hiring authorities, and they have elements of the system that they continue to layer on to what they have. And And, you know, the Ravens haven't completely restructured. I mean, they built their system to fit the players, most notably with the change from Flacco to Jackson. But they really have not had to change tremendously, because a lot of the DNA, like having a dime linebacker, that kind of thing, is an organizational belief. I don't think it's really at the coaching level. They're also drafting for it. They're trying to find cheap safeties who they think can come up and play dime and get cheap at weak side linebacker. So they've got a lot of those things that are built in. That may have changed now. We'll see how that goes going forward. But the you know, the Ravens, if you talk about draft picks being lottery tickets, and I just cannot stand when DaCosta does it. This reason it's not is that look at the Ravens and the success they've had, and then people will tell you, but it hasn't even been the same guy making the picks all day. Well, yes, it has. Ozzie and DaCosta have been the two loudest voices in that room since the very beginning. Phil Savage was there for a little bit in the early years, you know, saying some things. And they've had certainly other great support people, like great assistant coaches or like great positional coaches, who've been fantastic in the front office rows, like Ortiz, like Douglas, who have been guys who have gone on to bigger positions elsewhere. But the notion that the Ravens are somehow just lucky at drafting is such complete bullshit. And I wish EDC would not talk about it that way. I just wish
he has some, you know, like he spins a fair amount of smoke clouds during this season. So, you know, I don't think that he feels that they're doing it completely randomly whatsoever, but he's got, you know, some encouragement to talk about it in a certain way.
Right. And that's if it's, you know, false modesty, that's fine. And if it's just, you know, I don't wish to discuss our methods, that's fine. All of that is good. I just hate the fact that, you know, our own fans pick up on this crap and therefore devalue late round draft picks. It's just absurdly bizarre that they would do this after all of the success the Ravens have had with them.
Right.
And don't pick me some small set. Well, look who they drafted the sixth round. They had four picks and they blah, 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 blah. You know, or the fourth round a couple of years ago when they had six players and, you know, they didn't do as well as they have in other years. Don't show me one particular year, one particular round. The Ravens have always have been literally the best drafting team since they entered the league. And I think, you know, I have one other guest who comes on once in a while who talks about, you know, it's very, very tight between them and the Steelers in terms of who got more value relative to expected value of their picks. Right. And I love the fact that the organization has, you know, the way the Orioles of the 70s and 80s had the Oriole way, you know, that this team has had it, and they've had it for a longer period now than the Orioles had it. I mean, the Orioles, you know, had something that really made sense really throughout for about 23, 24 years. And the Ravens have now had it pretty much their entire history. If I don't count the March of Brody years, and I count it as just coming along at the time of Billick, and that wouldn't be fair, because at least from the front office perspective, it's been there since the very beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, then I think that you could say it's been about the same amount of time. But, you know, if you grew up when I grew up, you expected the Orioles to win every year, and they did for 18 straight seasons of winning baseball.
And while spending against the Yankees, you know, against, you know, like spending, like there was not a salary cap in baseball, but the Orioles had to operate as if there were a salary cap. They had to make do with the guys that they developed.
Yeah, very much so. So anyway, Jim, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Tell folks where they can hit you up online if they want to talk.
Well, you can find me on Twitter, Zip_Jim, or, you know, the second guy, first or second guy to like Ken's post when this link goes up. And I'm on the RSR forums. And when the new season starts, I'll be writing a column also for RSR on wide receivers, pass catchers.
Okay. All right. Very good. Other folks out there, if you'd like to get in a conversation like this, talk about your favorite Raven of the past, I'd love to hear from you. And in particular, if you know some older fans who can talk a little bit about the pre-2000 Ravens, those guys I want to talk to at the earliest possible opportunity, because there's been nobody who's really wanted somebody from that era. And they're very forgotten players, but maybe your dad, you know, doesn't listen to podcasts or whatever, but he'd like to have a little discussion about one of his favorite players from that era. I'd love to hear from him. Jim, thanks again for coming on.
Ken, thank you so much for having me. I always love doing this.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.